Back into the slot. Sandy Harf is on it and they score. Cornell has increased the lead to two.
Malott shooting, he scores.
Here's Caldas, a shot, score! Yanni Caldas!
O'Neal, Dullemeyer, stop, shoots, Hurt scores! Tristan O'Neal!
And Vanderlyn drives the front, shooting, he scores!
Good evening, hockey fans, and welcome to episode 8 of the Good Evening Hockey Fans podcast, a Cornell hockey podcast brought to you by the Cornell Daily Sun. My name is Zach Silver, senior on the Cornell Sun covering the men's hockey team. Joined today from Sibley Hall in Ithaca, New York, by Rafi Gendler, Sun assistant sports editor, soon to be sports editor. Coming at you live after Cornell came away from New England against Brown and Yale with just a 1 point to show for it. Tie against Brown Friday night, and a loss to Yale, one of the worst losses in quite some time, one of the only losses in quite some time on Saturday night. So, Rafi, let's just start off with kind of evaluating and what we made of this past weekend. Probably easily the worst weekend in quite some time, and one of their probably most frustrating weekends of the season.
Yeah, not a good weekend, and also not the end of the world or cause for panic, I think. Head coach Mike Schaefer, who we'll listen to a little bit later, made a good point on Tuesday afternoon that, you know, despite the mess of this past weekend, it doesn't feel like it right now. But he said, we're kind of on a roll. They've lost only two games since their loss to Dartmouth on November 30th. Since the start of the second half, the post-winter break half of the season, they have only two losses. The problem they'll run into going forward is they're banged up, they're tired, and the weekend was a chance for them to get some breathing room.
Definitely.
Atop the ECAC, and they failed to do that. And it was, I think, a disaster of a 53 seconds that doomed them, directly Friday and indirectly Saturday.
Yeah, so let's talk first about those 53 seconds. Obviously, it was a 3-0 lead against Brown, and then in the third period, just a span of three Brown goals in quick succession essentially stole a point from Cornell, which could have been an easy win. Not an easy win, but what could have been a big win ended up turning into just 1 point. What did you see in that sequence specifically that was kind of the problem for Cornell, that you think?
They just fell asleep a little bit for a minute. When you do that, you don't have to be asleep very long against any team, but especially a team that was rolling heading into the game. You fall asleep for a minute and bad things happen very quickly, specifically on the goals. The third one was a really nice play by Brown, but also a couple forwards, right in the slot. Again, I'll use the falling asleep metaphor, just unclear what they were doing. The second one, or maybe it was the first one, a really bad turnover, and then Galida gives up a rebound, and they buried the rebound. Hard to pin that one on the goaltender.
It seemed like he was almost in his glove and just fell out.
And the Galida we're used to seeing, the reigning All-American, is a guy who makes that save.
Right. And obviously the first one, which started the tirade for for the Bears. It was unusual, especially just given Cornell's kind of history and identity when it comes to defense and kind of locking down and showing poise, and that's a word that Schaefer likes to say a lot, poise. We didn't show a lot of poise tonight. It was just really unusual thing to see from a team coached by Schaefer. Like I said, is a very defensive minded team. Usually, and he mentioned even on Tuesday that maybe he's seen two goals scored quickly like that, but he's never seen his team give up three goals like that. And from my vantage point, I just saw a lot of guys just kind of not picking up their men and a lot of sloppy play in the defensive zone. And Schaefer did say that Galida has to bail him out at some points there, but he also was getting very little to no help from his defense there, especially just playing the body and especially on that third goal you mentioned. It was Tristan Mullin and Kyle Betts, two guys on Tommy Martian in the slot, and neither of them were able to pick him up. I mean, credit to Martian, he's a very good forward and one of Brown's best players, but one of those guys just has to be there. They're sophomores. They know him, and they know what it takes to defend inside the defensive zone. It's not like they're scoring only. I think Kyle Betts only has a couple points to his name this year. I was just surprised to see that lack of physicality from Cornell this weekend, and especially in that Brown game.
Yeah, and Tuesday afternoon, Schaefer made an interesting point that those three goals in a minute definitely took the wind out of Cornell's sails on Friday night, but also, you know, going into Saturday, they were tired. We've talked all year about the injury bug. You know, they're rolling 10 or 11 forwards. It's a fatigued team. And whereas, you know, after building a 3-0 lead on the road, you'd hope to spend the third period, you know, cruising right along, getting some guys some minutes. Instead, they had to, you know, work hard for, you know, to keep it tied for much of the period, and then, you know, were fatigued and continued to fall apart a little bit the next night at Yale, not aided by a bit of a mess between the pipes.
Yeah, and we'll talk about the goalies in a little bit. I kind of want to talk more about the fatigue and the just overall kind of tiredness that the team seems to be going through at this point, which isn't not a very good stretch to be going through, not a very good time of the season to be enduring this. So before we get into it, I just want to quickly play what Schaefer had to say on Tuesday about his team's overall health and fatigue level.
We've got to get these guys some rest. I mean, you know, it's quite evident throughout the course of the last few weeks where we're, you know, there's guys that are eating up a lot of minutes. And there was no question in my mind that I thought our guys were tired on the weekend. And you know, I think it's just a cumulative effect over the last few weeks of a lot of guys just playing a lot of minutes. So the response has been good. Every week we come back and talk about the things where we need to get better, things that we need to that we did, you know, pretty well. And in that, we've had to just adjust practice to save our guys' legs but still get better. So that's so the response has been pretty well. I mean, we just practice are totally different, but at the same time, we're definitely accomplishing some of the things that we need to get accomplished.
And that's head coach Mike Schaefer just talking about the overall conditioning and the health and fitness of his team at this point of the year. Not fitness so much as in speed, but more as in endurance when you're playing so many more minutes than you're used to. I mean, for the forwards right now, is basically two lines of dependable stalwarts and then a third line that kind of gets one guy in and out, and then the fourth line basically will go out every maybe two or three shifts just to give the rest of the line some rest. So I don't know, I mean, what do you make of just, I have my thoughts on kind of that excuse or that kind of reasoning, but what have you made of just the whole overall problems with conditioning, but more just tiredness at this point?
You know, on the one hand, every team is going through it this time of year, you know, final games of February coming up. On the other hand, Cornell has really had a rough go of it in terms of injuries. Mm-hmm. You know, on the one hand, you know, and I think the players would tell us this, you know, there's no excuse, you know, get it done. On the other hand, I think it's a pretty legit excuse at this point. You know, I appreciate coach's honesty in saying, yeah, we're tired. Guys like Barron, Vanderlyn, Starrett, Mullen, you know, all but the last of whom have been healthy all year have played a lot of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough when you're, you know, last year this team's biggest strength was its depth, and biggest point of luck, I guess, was its lack of injuries. And
what's different about that this year? Just the injuries and a lot of the senior class last year was a lot, if not the most talented guys on the team, they're at least very dependable. You can put them out there on the ice at any moment, pretty much all of them.
Yeah, it's a combination, and a few injuries expose lack of depth if you don't have a lot of depth. And I think Cornell, given the injuries, has pretty solid depth, but it's not stellar like it was last season. I am looking forward to seeing how Cornell can produce offensively without Cam Donaldson. You know, there were a few games there where Barron and Donaldson were really carrying the load offensively, and since Donaldson went down, it hasn't been uber concerning. They haven't had a ton of trouble putting the puck in the net, but we'll see who steps up. You know, recently guys like Jeff Malott have looked really good offensively.
Yeah, and Mitch Vanderlyn on Tuesday was telling us about how at some points this year, you know, health or whatever aside, they basically only had, when Malott was down, that there were only three upperclassmen in the forward lines, and
mm-hmm.
with Mitch, Bo, and Connor Murphy, And Noah Bald. Right. So I guess when Noah and Jeff are down, only
Bald
three.
Bald has been hurt much of the season, and Connor Murphy, I think, has done some really nice things for the team this year, but he played almost not at all last year. When you think of the upperclassmen, leaders, everyday fixtures in the lineup, he's not one of them.
Right. So, I mean, that's also just part of it is up front, there's not a lot of – I mean, all the guys from all sophomore class is obviously big contributors and key guys, but in terms of just experience, it's a little bit lacking up front, whereas on the defense, half the defensive core is made up of seniors, guys who have been doing this stuff for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. I think it's kind of an interesting – to that end, it's kind of an interesting debate that you can have where, is this a recruiting problem? Should there be more? I mean, obviously this season has way more injuries than anyone could have even ever foreseen, just in terms of magnitude and the number of injuries. But, for a guy like Zach Bramwell to be on the roster and for when he dresses, barely sees the ice, that's not really a great look. Obviously Chase Brakel not with the program anymore, but there's some other guys who seemingly could be fill his roles, just maybe aren't ready yet, or maybe weren't expected to be ready. I don't know. It just seems like there should be kind of precautions in place as opposed to players who dress but don't really play.
Yeah, maybe. Part of it is it's just been extraordinarily bad luck. It's hardly the type of thing you can prepare for.
Right.
And there's not much value in stashing a bunch of players who are never going to play on the off chance that you have an arm laceration, a broken collarbone, whatever Mullen had, broken foot or something.
Something with his foot.
I'm forgetting a handful of things.
It's true.
And there have been a couple of freshmen this season. Andreev before he got hurt. Michael Rigesh has been one of their best offensive players. He's been on the power play, second most power play goals on the team.
He kind of snuck up there.
And Joe Leahy has been, these last few games pretty solid. No one was expecting him to play much at all, and he's slowly crept his way into being a solid defenseman.
Yeah, I mean, I remember the beginning of the season, he looked pretty rough, and now he's still got some aspects he needs to sharpen up, but overall he's definitely looked like he kind of belongs
right.
to a certain extent. Not to the extent that the rest of the top four are right now, but it's at least in terms of competence and not being a liability, he's definitely done much better over the course as the season's progressed.
Yeah, he was eased into it. He only played a couple shifts early on, and now he's not contributing much offensively, but he's been a solid defenseman. He's not a liability at all.
Mm. Yeah. Moving on a little bit to the Yale game, kind of almost equally as bizarre as the Brown game, but in a much different way. It just wasn't a good defensive weekend for Cornell. I think we can say that pretty flat out and not have much blowback to that statement. I mean, obviously their guys playing hurt. Brennan Smith is known to have been injured recently, and it's unclear if he played this weekend hurt just because they literally needed the body, or if he's fully healthy. I think most the notion of being fully healthy is pretty much a mirage at this point, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't know that anybody is fully healthy.
Right. Maybe, Zach Bramwell. But in terms of, some of the start, I'm sure everyone's just dinged up in some, even if it's like a bruise or a sore shoulder or a sore pinky toe or whatever, everyone's got something going on. But that doesn't really, and I guess that trickles down to goalies in terms of quality of play in front of them. But in the Yale game, it was a bizarre sequence just in terms of how goalie played out. So Yale goes up 3-0, two quick goals in a span of 40 seconds.
Right, so a little bit of deja vu after three goals in 53 seconds.
So Yale gets one goal in the last 17, 18 seconds of the first period, and they get two within 40 seconds of each other early in the second period. Immediately after the third goal, Schaefer decides enough is enough with Goleta, and he brings in McGrath.
And lighting the fire under the guys a little bit totally worked.
Yeah.
After pulling Goleta.
Yeah, and that's 90% of the reason I feel like goalies get pulled, is just to wake the team up, less about the goalies play. So right after Goleta was pulled, Cornell proceeds to score two goals and takes a little bit more control of the game to make it 3-2. And then a couple minutes after Cornell scored their second goal, Yale's Ted Hart basically just takes a puck. He gets by his defender behind the net, takes a puck, and just simply wraps it around McGrath without being contested much. I mean, McGrath could have, you know, used a poke check or just basically given him a little bit more trouble. But the guy basically was able to just walk around him and send it far post past him. Literally slid on the ice, I think.
Right.
After that, you know, McGrath was out of the net.
His night was done after about 10 minutes.
Less than 10 minutes. His first action in 6 games. Less than 10 minutes into his relief, he's gone and glides back in. And I don't think I've ever seen a coach do that.
Yeah, we asked Schaefer the other day if he had done it before. He said, "Oh yeah, but I don't think I've ever seen it before. Pull a guy and then pull the guy who you replaced him with."
Yeah, I mean, he could have done that years ago. I've never seen it since I've been here. But yeah, I mean, just really, really strange sequence. And I mean, you asked Schaefer on Tuesday about if it would shake up Matt's confidence at all, and I think it's worth just giving a quick listen to that about what Schaefer had to say about kind of that thought process with the goalies this weekend.
We protect our goalies pretty well here, and I just didn't think he made the save. Made a change, then I didn't think Austin made the save on the stuff. He's got to have that. Would have that 99 out of 100 times, just misplayed it, and that's why I pulled him and went back with Matt. And I was ready, if Matt gave up another one like that, I was going to pull him again and put someone else in. You know, I was just going to rotate because I wasn't, just like the rest of the guys, I wasn't happy with, you know, their performance, just like our team. You know, he cheated just like anybody else, right? I mean, he's a confident kid and he can handle it. And I told him why I did it. It's just, and he knows he's got a big, he makes one or two big saves in that game. You know, we're talking about totally, maybe it, even though we don't play well, you talk about maybe it being a different outcome. You know, like the first four goals, if two of them, you know, are not really kind of what those two guys normally give up.
And that was head coach Mike Schaefer on his decision to pull Matt Galita for Austin McGrath on Saturday before pulling Austin McGrath for Matt Galita on Saturday. So Matt Galita saw two separate stints of play on Saturday against Yale.
And all signs point to, just to, you know, clarify for listeners, Goliath is the guy going forward.
Oh, yeah, totally.
He was the guy. He still is the guy. This didn't
yeah. change anything. I mean, as you alluded to earlier, Cornell's only lost 2 games since November 30th, and only one of those was in regulation. Yeah. So to say, like, Goliath has played to lose his job in this weekend is probably a bit of a ridiculous assessment.
Right. Well, and in the Brown game, he was, you know, there was that one rebound that wasn't great, but overall he was solid. He made some nice saves to keep them in it for a while, to keep them ahead for a while.
Yeah, he really didn't get much support from his defense in that game, simply.
And then the Yale game, yeah, there was that one goal that got him yanked, but it wasn't a
disaster. Yeah, that third goal, Schaefer was very critical of it, and Austin's goal, obviously, but it was just kind of an innocent-looking shot from the... I mean, it was a hard shot, but, you know, not from a very high-danger area, right along the hash marks on the far boards, and there's a little bit of traffic in front of Galita, but it kind of just hits him in the pads and trickles through and across the line. And that gave Yale 3-0 lead, and Schaefer decided he'd seen enough and needed to do something to kind of maybe save this game. And
yeah, and we're getting close to the time of year when you want to be able to win, even if it's a tough battle or grind it out, or if you haven't brought it offensively, you know, you're not playing your best, you want your goaltender to be rolling, to be able to bail you out.
Yeah, and March. I appreciate the sentiment that, you know, the goalie has to steal one, or the goalie, you know, you got to have the trust in your goalie that he's going to be able to play lights out enough in one game that even if your defensive front of him and the team forwards in front of him aren't playing so well, he can still win you a game. But, I don't know, sometimes I believe you pick it up the goalie a little bit. I mean, Cornell, only 2 goals on Saturday, and neither of them came when Galita was playing. And they were, you know, the first period was a bit back and forth, but they definitely had a few opportunities to get on the board. But, I mean, it's kind of like a lose-lose situation as a goalie, because if you play well, you're kind of doing your job, and then if you have one off night and you don't get bailed out, then it was a bad game for you. Like, think about it, like a pitcher. A kicker or a pitcher. I mean, there are pitchers who get a win after giving up, like, 7 earned runs because their offense just exploded for, like, 10 runs. I feel like they got to have a little bit. There's got to be like some kind of more balance in hockey in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it goes both ways. And Cornell historically, and last season and this season, you know, they do a good job making their goalies look good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Goliath last season had a lot of, you know, 14 save shutout type games.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a few of those recently too.
You know, when sometimes when you when you really see if a goaltender has come to play, as if the team in front of him doesn't look so good, and you know, can he still keep the team in it?
Mm-hmm.
Like when Cornell played Arizona State, the Sun Devil goaltender who's
Joey DeCord.
DeCord, yeah. Yeah, they lost. The Arizona State did not look great. They lost like 6-1, but he kept them in it a lot longer than they should have been in it. He was
right.
He was stellar and still got pulled, which was kind of funny.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Goliath, yeah, I'm sure he has plenty of those games left in him this year.
Yeah, and I don't think this is reason for a big
concern. Not at all. Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see kind of how he responds. I don't think, you know, kind of like Schaefer mentioned, like he's a prideful, confident guy. I don't think... He's obviously been in situations like this at some point in his career, so I'm you know pretty sure this isn't going to phase him too much. But it'll be interesting to see, especially with senior night and RPI and Union coming to town this coming weekend, how the team responds and overall to all the kind of adversity they've had to endure these past couple weeks.
Yeah, senior night should be fun.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But now I want to kind of take a step back and just. Look at the ECAC
as a whole. Playoff pictures. A little bit of numbers.
Some numbers games. So just to kind of set the scene, Cornell right now is barely atop the ECAC. They have a 1-point cushion on Quinnipiac, 2 points on Yale, and only 3 points against Clarkson and Harvard, who are tied for fourth. I mean, that's a pretty tight window. When only the first four teams get a bye, and the only 3 points separating Cornell from a bye and a first round matchup, which would be, I don't want to be too hyperbolic, but that could be pretty devastating to a team that's really just looking to get healthy and looking.
Yeah,
to,
they desperately need the bye.
Desperately.
And how I see it is they've got four games left, and two of them are really against beatable teams.
Must win teams.
Yeah, they've got RPI at home on Friday, and then their final weekend of the season, they have St. Lawrence on Friday, followed by Clarkson, which could be a huge game on Saturday. Cornell's been really good on Fridays all year. You know, they won't be tired from a game the night before. You know, RPI is ninth, and St. Lawrence dead last in the conference. You know, if you lose at home to RPI, you don't really deserve a first-round bye. and that's not a diss to RPI. I actually think they're pretty good.
Happened last year. They got first round, but Cornell got first round.
Well, it happened much earlier. That was a whole different thing. But fair enough. So they've got two really winnable games and then two tough ones. Union, you never know what you're going to get with them. They beat the number one team in the country, St. Cloud, earlier in the year. And then they have a bunch of these random losses, too. So you never know what you'll get with them.
Yeah, it's really strange. They're what, ninth? They're eighth in the conference right now?
Right, they're looking like they'll host a playoff series, but a bye is unlikely for them.
Yeah, right now they're hanging on to hosting a playoff series. I mean, they're ranked number 20 in the country, but ranked number 8 in the ECAC, right. Which is something you really don't see too much. Even with Yale ranked above, or I guess it's not that ridiculous. I mean, Clarkson has you know much 7 more wins than Yale does, and Yale's ahead of them in the ECAC standing. So, I mean, it does help, obviously, for your ECAC buys and stuff, but
Union's probably only getting in the NCAA tournament if they win the ECAC, right? I haven't looked at the math, but
I would be very surprised if Union's able to. Yeah, right now it says, right now the College Hockey News Monte Carlo simulation has them at just 22% chance of getting in and a 4% chance of winning the bid.
Okay,
only 18% chance of an at large and 4% to win ECACs.
So they do have a decent chance of an at-large right now.
18, I don't know, I would not say 18% is a huge chance.
No, but it's, well, anyhow, okay.
There are only a handful of teams that are out, and Vermont.
Yeah. Well, nobody's out, because they could win their conference.
Well, they don't even have any simulations for Vermont, for Ferris State, Connecticut, St.
Maybe,
Lawrence.
Maybe their conference playoffs are different, who knows.
Maybe. So, you know, in this Monte Carlo simulation, Cornell right now, is at number 10 and at number 10 in the pairwise.
80% chance.
80% chance. Last week when we spoke, it was 94, I believe, around
there.
Yeah,
it was almost a lock. So
it was almost a lock.
Not looking great, but...
Well, it's still looking...
80%
is
still...
80%
is
still... I mean, I don't think they have to win the conference to make NCAAs. I think if they, at least if they get to Lake Placid, they'll probably get an at-large bid.
Well, even if they lock up the first round bye and lose, I even still think.
Really?
Well, I'm not working on any math here, but it, I think they're a tournament team. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't if they got the first round bye. Yeah, it'd be pretty. That'd be tough, but.
But and you and they get a first round bye and lose to a team like Brown, Dartmouth, Union. You know, those aren't bad losses per se.
Yeah, yeah, you could say that, but I would say good chance of getting it as long as they lock a first round bye. But I'd be much more comfortable if they got to Lake Placid and didn't have to worry about that at all. And maybe even one, that'd be fun to cover.
Yeah, for sure.
The White Log Cup at one point.
They control their own destiny at this point. If they win, they'll be the number one seed, first round bye, can relax a little bit, and they'll have a clean path to Lake Placid.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the what's left on tap for ECAC play for kind of the top tier, Cornell has two basically, I don't want to say an easy win, but two games that are... You can assume that's going to be at least 3 points,
right,
in Brown and RPI and St. Lawrence. At least I'm comfortable saying at least 3 points through those two games, and then they got two more games that aren't quite so easy. Like you mentioned, Union could be lights out, or they could completely fall flat like they did last time Cornell and Union played. And then you obviously have Clarkson to end it off the season, which is always a tough game up in Potsdam.
Yeah, that could be a huge game too, because you've got a Clarkson right now only 3 points behind Cornell. You know, last weekend of the season, they could be jockeying for the number one seed. Clarkson could be right on the cusp of Cornell could be right on the cusp of a first round bye.
Right.
Could be a Lake Placid preview, you know, all sorts of interesting storylines there.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think this weekend is just uber important. I mean, just getting the breathing room back is big. And you're looking at Quinnipiac's schedule. They have St. Lawrence and Clarkson. So, yeah, that's probably 2 points in St. Lawrence, and Clarkson will definitely be a dogfight. So this weekend, I'd say Cornell's probably rooting for Clarkson, and then next weekend, I'd say they're probably not rooting for Clarkson.
Quinnipiac, the last weekend, they're at Brown and Yale, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that's a tough weekend for them, too, which you know, Cornell would like to see some teams do damage to.
Right. So, but, I mean, both Yale and... I would say Yale's schedule from here on out is harder. I would say none of their... No game they have left is an easy win. They have Dartmouth, Harvard, Princeton, Quinnipiac.
Okay, yeah.
I can easily see Dartmouth always gets stingy at the end of the year. I could easily see that. A tire loss, Harvard.
And Dartmouth could conceivably still get a first round bye, too.
Yeah, they're still in it. So I think that Cornell's kind of in a good position, at least in terms of strength of schedule, to close out the year. But, you know, it's kind of, no matter what, just easier to control their own destiny, like you say.
Yeah, the best choice is to win the games.
Don't even make it a question.
Right.
And that starts this Friday with RPI. Should we talk about the upcoming weekend a little bit, I think?
Yeah, with RPI, we'll see what they can do against the goaltender Owen Savory. It was a frustrating game for them in Troy last time. It was a 1-1 tie, but Cornell had, I think it was 41 shots on goal. RPI somewhere around 15. You know, frustrating. And following that game, you know, Cornell seemed to place an emphasis on going to the net, getting traffic in front of the goaltender, making him uncomfortable, causing some trouble. So we'll see if that kind of frustrating tie and wanting to beat Savory, the goaltender, puts a little bit of a fire under Cornell on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean they've Savory's been pretty. I mean, since playing Cornell, like he hasn't given up more than 3 goals. And he took one from Princeton 6-2. Did RPI and. Even they lost to Yale 2-1, but he only gave up 2 goals on 37 shots. So, I mean, his game hasn't really let up since Cornell last was in the Capital Region. So that'll definitely be an interesting game. And
Union the next night, senior night, Cornell should get up for that one. And then it's a huge game for Union trying to at least hang on to a home playoff series. And
they got
snapped at home last time they met Cornell 4-0.
Well, what happened last time Union was here on a senior night?
Last time Union was here on senior night?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was in high school or something.
Wasn't that last year?
No, Cornell was at Union for senior night last year.
For Union senior night then?
Right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Never mind. Oh, you guys were there, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a fun game.
What happened last time Cornell and Union met in the
season? Well, yeah, that was an interesting weekend last year. It was the final weekend of the season. Cornell went to RPI and then Union, and they beat RPI. 2-1 or 3-1, something like that. No, it was more. Well, anyhow, they beat RPI on Friday night to clinch the Cleary Cup. So Saturday night at Union, which was shaping up to maybe be this huge game, actually, you know, mathematically speaking, didn't matter much for Cornell. Senior Hayden Stewart got the start and goal.
Right.
It was Union senior night, and Union won 4-3. It was a fun back and forth game in which the Union power play, which last year was just crazy good, scored like 3 or 4 goals. They just Cornell couldn't really stop them.
Mm-hmm.
But it was interesting last year. You know, Cornell got a pretty convincing win at RPI after a few weeks earlier losing to RPI at home in frustrating fashion. You know, they had gone up to number one in the country and then just turned in a really crappy performance at home. I'm still not sure what happened.
Hmm.
So a little bit similar this year. You know, they had a frustrating tie, and you know, they've got him again near the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, but looking at Union's play since that 4-0 loss at home,
yeah, they've been pretty solid. Right?
Yeah, they've won six-year over Colgate, won, lost to Harvard, win over Dartmouth, tie with Quinnipiac, and win over Princeton.
It's so interesting. They're better on Saturdays than Fridays recently.
Yeah, I guess they...
And Cornell's been crazy good on Fridays all year. And interesting.
Yeah, so that'll be pretty... I mean, I'm sure Union want to spoil Cornell senior day, and B, just desperately need at least a point to keep postseason home ice alive. So I'm sure that especially will be pretty high-flying matchup once again.
Mm-hmm. So we talked about this the other day a little bit. There are 5 seniors on the roster. You know, in the past, Schaefer's maybe, you know, given them the first shift of the game. You've got 3 defensemen and 2 forwards. Who do you slide up front for that opening faceoff?
Right. I don't remember. I actually don't remember past years them bothering, or not bothering, but actually doing senior lineups.
Yeah, we were chatting with Vanderlyn about it the other day. We'll see. It could be funny.
It's Brendan Smith, Matt Nuttall, Mitch Vanderlyn, Bo Sterrett, and Alec McRae.
Right, so it's 3 defensemen.
Vanderlyn's choice was Nuttall to go up and play wing for the first shift.
Right, and then one of the players, as we were walking out the other day, I can't remember who, said Smitty? And someone else said, who knows. And I think McRae would be funny, but maybe that's just because I think he's kind of fun.
Do you think they're actually going to play a shift, or they're just going to be out there for the face-off, and then...
Oh, who knows? I don't know.
Whoever's playing forward is just going to hop off.
Depending on what happens on the face-off, you can't hop off right away.
Yeah, I guess.
But yeah, we'll see. It's mostly just a silly thing.
I would...
But that'll be fun for the guys, too.
I'd probably put probably put Alec McRae up there, just because he's a little more offensive-minded than the other two guys.
Yeah, I guess.
He's got a nice shot.
Yeah, Nuttall might have some more. I mean, are we talking from a strategic standpoint or from a what would be funnier?
Oh, for funny, I think Nuttall will be funny, but Brendan Smith would be funny just in of his almost wholeheartedly a defenseman.
Yeah.
how many points does he have this year? He has just 3 points.
Well, he's been hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
And he probably still leads the team in block shots, right? Let's see here.
I think he's just behind in the total.
I don't know, Caldas and Nuttall are ahead of him.
But right, I mean, they play in every game.
They played a lot more.
Yeah, that's impressive.
He's got 34 block shots in 16 games.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's a reason he's been getting injured so much, but, like, I'm impressed by the overall willingness of this team to sell out their body in terms of just block a piece of rubber. It really is impressive, and that's just kind of the culture that they breed here, I guess.
Yeah, that's a big Mike Schaefer thing, too. He loves block shots.
Yeah.
It seems half the time if they lose a game, it's because they didn't block shots, right?
Yeah.
And it's funny, but also true. There's something to it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this will be definitely an emotional Saturday for the seniors. I want to take a listen real quick to what Mitch Vanderlyn had to say just about being the senior class this year in such a challenging, trying year, and just kind of what the evolution of their role has been, especially for him as a captain.
Yeah, and this was solid captain material, too, you know, on Tuesday, giving lots of credit to the younger guys for how they've stepped up, you know, deflecting credit for, you know, enduring this rough injury-plagued season.
Yep, let's take a listen.
To say that we did is kind of undermines just how good of a job younger guys have done. Because, I mean, I know, maybe up front, for example, we only have me and Bo as seniors, whereas I remember when I was a sophomore, for example, we had, was it 5 seniors up front? 5 seniors up front, then we had another 3-4 juniors. And so when we had like Malazo for a while up front, we had four upperclassmen. That's it. So I think to say that we did it, I'd honestly give a lot of credit to the younger guys just for how they managed to step in right away. Guys who are sophomores to basically take over a big role right away. It's pretty tough to do, and they've done a really good job with it. So I'd probably give them more credit than anything for what they've done.
And that was senior captain Mitch Vanderlaan on just kind of what his teams and his classes, trials and tribulations have been like this year. So he and four other seniors will be honored this Sunday.
Saturday.
I keep saying Sunday. I don't know what's going on with me. This Saturday, when Cornell plays Union, it'll be a nice post-game ceremony. And as you talked about a few minutes ago, the ceremonial, all five seniors probably taking the opening draw, perhaps. Well, I guess we'll see how Friday goes and if it's bad.
Yeah, we should have asked Coach about that.
I don't remember him doing it, so it never was really something that came to mind. Interestingly enough, though, the senior class started out as a nine-member class, and now graduate just five.
So they lost four. Angelo, of course, is one who left early to join the.
These guys played when I was a freshman.
Yeah, these guys predate me. I don't know who the other.
You don't know any of them are.
No.
So, guys who were with the program and no longer are. Was Anthony Angelo, obviously, who's now signed with the Pittsburgh Penguins in the AHL. Chad Otterman, who is actually a two-sport athlete, a lacrosse and hockey player.
Well, not a two-sport athlete for long.
Right? All right.
Did he switch to lacrosse?
I don't know if he really played lacrosse, but he definitely stopped playing hockey. I don't know if he really even played his freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
Trent Shore, who's a defenseman.
I remember that name. He was around the team last year.
Yeah, I think he was kind of there, but didn't really have much a role.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have Luke Lawler, who was a forward and didn't last after his first season, and the other five guys. So that's four. It's a nine-member class. It's pretty weird to think about how just guys will come to the program. I mean, you have obviously Chase Brakel from this year who decided to leave the program, and then last year, Corey Hoffman. No, a couple years ago, Corey Hoffman, a member of the junior class. These are all guys that predate you.
That's right.
Because you're with the Barron class.
Yeah.
I don't think they've had anyone.
It's a good class.
Yeah, it's a really good class. Yeah. I don't think they've had anyone leave in the whole time here. I think they've pretty much stayed how they are.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
They haven't been here so long. So
yeah. Saturday will be a nice way to send those guys off. But they like to say their real senior night is the first round of ECAC, or their second round of ECACs. And Cornell hopes to have a home bye and be able to host whichever team they get in the quarterfinals of the ECAC.
And there's almost an 100% chance that Cornell will play a home playoff series, right?
Yeah, I can't.
Actually, it might be an 100%.
It is 100%.
Chance,
yeah, there's no way for them to get below Rensselaer, RPI.
Okay, yeah.
So, yeah, Cornell, no matter what, will have two more games at home after this coming weekend. They have four more games in the regular season in total, and then it's anyone's guess what happens when elimination week comes.
And, you know, if this team gets a bye, and they get Andreev and Donaldson back, and they've got Alex Green getting his feet under him a little bit, this could be a team that peaks heading into, you know, ECAC semifinals and NCAA tournament play instead of last year when they hit their peak a little too early. This could be a dangerous team.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the most...
Only time will tell.
That's kind of the most impressive part is that they've pretty much mirrored, for the most part, the success of second half from last year, even the first half as well.
Yeah.
Not as much, not the first half that was mirrored, but overall success. They pretty much picked up the slack, and they've been doing it with all these injuries and all this adversity. I think that's been pretty remarkable. Just there hasn't been much of a drop-off in terms of at least points from last year.
Mm-hmm.
With almost a lot of the guys who were part of that team last year injured. And I guess we should also mention that Cody Haskinen has been confirmed he will be out for the rest of the season with that arm injury.
Right.
He suffered after taking a skate blade to the arm against Clarkson.
Ouch.
So he's done for the year. But yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see how things pan. I mean, I personally would be surprised if Donaldson doesn't. I think Donaldson's status is kind of sent more with depending how Cornell does. Whereas if they do well this weekend, I could see him just holding him off until playoffs. Or if they need a win or two next weekend to secure at least a bye, I think.
Yeah, it's hard to say.
I wouldn't be too surprised to see him because he is injured. I don't think the prognosis is as bad as it was when it was first sustained. He's practicing with the team intermittently, not every day, but some days, the team said today. So yeah, we'll see kind of what his future is. But I think it's kind of similar with Smith, where if he needed to play in like the NCAA, if it was in like the Frozen Four, he would definitely be in something like that.
Yeah, whereas he's got to block all those shots.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas Max Andreev is definitely out for a couple
of
weeks now.
But once he's back, and that could be for the playoffs, and he was solid for them before going down. So Cornell, you know, an impressive season by any standard, but especially given all the injuries, you know, top 10 in the country, looking like they'll be in the NCAA tournament again. A successful season by pretty much every measure. Is making the NCAA tournament and losing in the first round again a success, or, you know, for the third year in a row, is that a disappointment at this point? If you're Cornell,
I think it's got to be a disappointment, 100%. I mean, you guys were there last year. What was their attitude after losing in the first round? And how did it compare with losing to Princeton?
You know, it sucks to lose, and the players definitely had that mindset. You know, it was to have such a great season, you know, when you were looking like you could be a Frozen Four team and abruptly sucks. But Schaefer's assessment of it was, you know, we won 20-some games, made the NCAA tournament, great season, I couldn't be happier. And he makes the good point that it's hard to be in the top 16 in college hockey. Once you get there, every team is really good. You know, you never know what's going to happen. So, you know, from a fan or media perspective, it's really easy to say, oh, they've got to do better. And I guess I do think that, you know, if you're just reaching the playoffs is nice, but you'd like to year after year build on that. But getting there is hard, and an accomplishment not to be overlooked also.
Right, yeah. I mean, I think...
And we're looking way ahead here, yeah, the 1 week at a time and all that.
But. I think it for sure is an accomplishment just to be there. And, you know, especially just considering what happened this year, maybe it's a little bit more so, but I think just, like, it would be hard for the team to tell itself that this was a successful year if they went back for the third straight year and had another first-round exit.
And last year they had some bad luck. Maybe this year they'll have some good luck. Maybe they got their bad luck out of the way early with all these injuries.
Yeah, I mean, like, Cornell's been to the NCAAs under Schaefer, I think, 11 times now, and only once are they advanced past the first round.
Yeah.
Which is
disappointing, and also it shows you how hard it is to do.
Yeah.
You've got, you know, one of the best coaches and one of the longest tenured coaches in college hockey, and once has gotten past the first round.
It's, yeah, that's pretty remarkable. I mean, there's a stretch of he did it 4 times in 5 years, starting in 2002, and only in 2003 did they make it to the Frozen Four.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they went 35-1 that year, which is pretty remarkable. And the next year they had a bit of a drop off, but I mean they're already behind pace of where they were last year, but who knows? Maybe all this...
Yeah, last year they started so hot.
Right.
This year not so much. Right?
Who knows? Maybe all this turmoil and all this strife and injury will pay off in the long run just based on pure mental toughness. And, you know, I think it's kind of strange just how... I mean, the sophomore class obviously got there last year and they're the biggest class, but just with how young or small the upperclassmen are, I think, or the upperclassmen group is... But they've been there now 2 years in a row. I think they're especially...
Yeah, the sophomore class makes up so many key pieces of the team, and they've really taken a big step forward this year. You know, a lot of them were solid last year but didn't really need to take on the extra role. And this year, you know, there's Galida, of course, McGrath stepping in, Barron, Donaldson. I think Tristan Mullen's been one of their best forwards. You know, that class has been really solid, has the team where it is now. You know, Alex Green back from injury. Kyle Betts quietly, really a solid defensive forward. And, you know, if you're someone following Cornell, it's exciting. You've got 2 more years of these guys, too.
Yeah, for sure. We'll see how this weekend pans out and how you know, it kind of sets the stage for going to the final weekend of play up in North Country. No matter what happens this weekend, unless you have any final thoughts, no matter what happens this weekend, we'll be sure to discuss it on the next edition of the Good Evening Hockey Fans podcast.
That's
again,
right.
You can follow us on Twitter and keep up with all Cornell news and updates. I'm at Zach Silver. Rafi's at Rafi_Gendler. But yeah, no matter what happens this coming weekend, we'll be sure to discuss it on the next episode. Good evening, hockey fans.